just wanted to say a few things. Thank you all for coming and sharing your love with us. It's so wonderful.
This is our Memories Night. We do it every year at our gathering, and we love to do it. Tonight will be slightly different in that we have two memories from people that have been pre-recorded. You may know them, you may not know them. I thought I would start with them to get us kind of warmed up. They're short, like each of them are 5 minutes. The first one's from Ed Handley. If you know Ed, I got to spend about an hour with him on a conference call and recorded the whole thing, but I chose a five-minute segment to play tonight.
I was initiated in 1969. When I found out there was a master, I went to Vancouver and I found out there was a master. And while I was in Vancouver, I was looking at another group there that was teaching how to get out of the body, how to do astral projection. And I said, that's it. I have to get to India. So I had to work for a while to save up the money to get the one-way ticket. And I went to India in 1971, and I came in September of 71, and I came back in April of 72. When I arrived at India, at Delhi Ashram, Master wasn't there. He was up working at Manavkendra. So I had to wait, but I took a taxi with another gentleman up to Manavkendra. We arrived there, and the taxi dropped us near Master's cottage. And Master was over in the where the old folks' home was being built, supervising construction. He had just had a major operation. I walked over to where he was, and I stood off to a distance and watched for a bit. And then I thought, well, here I've come all the way from Toronto, and I'm just watching him at a distance. So I didn't have any idea. I was very ignorant. I didn't have any idea at all how to behave with a master. So I just walked right over to where he was, squatted down on my ankles, and grabbed his hand and shook it. And he was quite, it was a surprise. Anyway, I shook his hand quite vigorously and then explained to him that was Ed Handley, who had just come in from Toronto, Canada. So Master was working at the time, so he got up and he said, you were about 100 feet or 200 feet from the from his cottage. And so he said, get in the car, and he drove me the 100 feet to his cottage. And he offered me tea, and he'd asked if I had anything to eat, etc. And I was okay in that regard. So while I was there, other Westerners were also there. So I asked the people who were there, where are you guys, and where does Master spend his time? And the people said, well, we're up at his cottage in Dehradun, and he comes down here to work on the Manavkendra site most of the day. So that was that. And then I had a chance to talk to him privately, and I said, Master, can I stay here at Manavkendra? So he looked at me, and then he made arrangements for a bed and a little carpet to be put in the other end of his cottage. The cottage consisted of his personal quarters, the meeting room where the Westerners or anybody who visited him would be, and then at the other end, a bedroom. So he let me stay in the cottage. I stayed there that night, and I got up in the morning, and I wanted to take a shower to wash off the travel. So I turned on the shower, and the shower was bitterly cold. The water was being drawn from about 250 feet down, and it was ice cold. And I'm a Westerner, and I was blue by the time the shower was over. So I mentioned this to Taiji. Taiji was Master's assistant, and took care of his needs. And within the day, a water heater showed up and was installed. So I was permitted to stay in the cottage that Master stayed in at the other end, at the other bedroom. So I was in that bedroom, and that night, Taiji comes over, and she brought me Master's meal. She'd served Master the meal. He'd picked at it, taken a couple of things out of it, and she gave it to me to eat. It was amazing. But I got to spend 7 months at the feet of my master, and I saw many, many things. This is just a skip through some of the highlights, you know, what I've just been telling you about.
And now we have some memories that were recorded this afternoon when we went to visit Joanna Swanson.
Remember Jerry Turk?
Oh, yeah.
Did anyone forget Jerry Turk?
We can't forget Jerry Turk. And Louie, she was a shocker. She'd wear those hats, you know, like a pointed hat. She would dress up and really perform, you know, a performance, you know, for Sensei.
Carol.
Yeah, you had to appreciate her. She was very devoted to Master, though.
I remember when she went to India, and she came back, and she said, "Master called me Mrs. Gar." She was all excited. And then I found out what really happened. Master was talking to some people, and Jerry barged in and interrupted. And Master said, "Who does she think she is, Mrs. God?"
And she took it proudly. She took it proudly, huh? "Master called me Mrs. God."
Friend of mine and I, one night, went to Fort Lauderdale Women's Hall to hear Paul Twitchell. And he was talking on Eckankar.
Eckankar.
And we were listening to him, and all of a sudden he said, "Follow me, follow me." And I stood up and said, "Why should I follow you?" And he said, "I don't take questions like that." So I nudged my friend and I said, "Let's get out of here." So we went to the back of the hall. My friend went out to get his car. And I saw Master's picture. And I said, "That's God." And just at that moment, my friend honked his horn. And I walked out. It was pitch black. 10 o'clock at night, and all of a sudden, this guy jumps out of the bushes, and he grabs my arm, and he stuffs something into my head, and he says, "This is your true master." I said, "Huh?" And then he runs off, and when I got home, I opened it up, and it was the same picture. So that very night, I wrote a letter. "Dear Mr. Singh, who are you?" I said, "Some man jumped out at me from the bushes and gave me your picture. But who are you?" And I waited for an answer. And it came back, and he said, "Call Jerry Turk. You're to go to Satsang on Sunday, and we'll go from there." So I went to Satsang, and I smelled roses. There were roses all around. And I said after Satsang to Jerry, "Where are all the roses?" He said, "We don't have roses." It was Master who was there.
Ah, that's beautiful, yeah.
John, are you still awake?
I'm happy that I'm here. I was reluctant. But when Christine agreed to come, I realized Master wanted me here. And I'm so happy. I'm listening to your voice. I realize this is a true satsang.
Yes. Wait a minute. That's right. You're right. This is a satsang.
Yeah.
A beautiful satsang. I miss having initiates here. Albert and Sam are here. But we don't get together that often.
Yeah. Do you have ice cream in the freezer?
Yeah, I keep it there.
Do you want some now?
No, no.
Okay.
I don't want anything.
Okay.
Just your presence has been enough. Your food for the soul.
All right. Who's our first? Rudy, are you our first live story? Okay, here it is.
You probably know most of the stories that I've told you before, but anyway, I'll just repeat this one. But through the years that I've been meditating and man making over the last year or so, I've come to a deeper understanding of what actually happened during those times that I've had these experiences. So I'm going to give you a deeper version of it. You know, so I'm walking across in the ashram. They had a walkway there, a patio area. It was a patio area. And Master was walking with Mr. Khanna and Yogi Bhajan, and they were walking towards the housing where Phil Perrin and Eve, his wife, was putting there. And Phil had phlebitis in the legs, you know, so Master would come at that late evening, in the evening, to visit the, you know, the people that were ill and things like that, and especially Phil, they go there. But they had all these people that would know that, and they would naturally crowd around Master, and they would sort of stop him from going to where he was going, you know. So I was passing by, and I looked over, and I said, Master's going to stop. I don't want to stop him there. I don't want to be bothered. I'm just being very noble, you know. Let me go upstairs and meditate, and I'll leave Master go about his business. But the crowd opened up, and all of a sudden, Master's transference comes through. And it was looking like a Hieronymus Bosch painting of Jesus Christ, you know, carrying a cross, you know. And there were all these people around it, but there were dark figures, you know, around. So Master's transference says, "Why don't you come and watch the show?" So I said, "Oh, okay. Master wants me to watch the show. How am I going to watch the show?" So I said, "Oh, well, I have to get up higher to see what's going on because there's 12 people around." So I climb up on the table, and I'm climbing up there. I get on the top. Steve said, "Who is this nut, you know, climbing up on the table?" But anyway, I climbed up on the table to get a good view, an overview. And sure enough, Master's there with Mr. Khanna and Yogi Bhajan. And Master's hands are going up like this, and I'm looking at him. And someone is pulling his hands up. And someone is opening his mouth to talk. And I said, "Oh, Master is not speaking on his own. There's this God power. So he wants me to watch the God power do this stuff, you know." And there he is. And then all of a sudden, they stop, and then chairs will come out, and they put chairs for the Master and Yogi Bhajan and Mr. Khanna, and they make them sit down. I said, "Oh, this God is orchestrating the whole scene." It's an orchestrated thing. But then I realized, what are they there for? What does Master want me to see really? So I said, oh, they're looking at this saint, this holy person, who represents the God power. And they're looking at him for that particular beatific vision of God that he carries, that he expresses. And they all want that. They all want that view. And that's the vision that I got for walking across there. And, well, most of us don't have the pleasure and the benefit of going within and seeing Master in his radiant form, you know. And I don't have it, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that haven't had that experience, you know. But there's one thing you do have to know is that when you leave your body, Master is going to be there. And he is like the king of spirituality in that realm. And if you're out of the body and you're shooting up into space there, and you're climbing up, he's there to throw his net like an expert angler and catch you in his net and take you with him, like the ancient Babylonian fisher kings, you know, like of old. That's all I would like to leave with you right now, anyway. Thank you. Who else would like to go?
Thank you. I'd like to first start by saying, I can do this. Thank you, Olivia. Thank you so much for all that you do, and we do not realize all that she does. Her attention to detail is incredible. I found out something today, which I was not aware of. On our name tags, the little flowers are forget-me-nots. So thank you. And I want to say thank you to the Wizard of Oz Jr. You know, yeah. And if I'm forgetting anybody, you can sit on me for breakfast. But when Master first came to Washington, you know, there was great expectations. And we were at the Friends Meeting House, and Master was coming in, and he sat on the dais. And he was so humble, saying that he was the most grateful person because there were so many of us and there was only one of him. And his motion of his body and everything, it was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. And I had incredible good luck to travel around with the Master, but that first sighting, it was just incredible. One more little quick story. There was one of the initiates that I struck up a friendship with along the way, and she happened to be in the house where Master was staying. And she said that the Master was up all night long coughing. And there was one meeting that I was present where Master was coughing, and as Master was coughing, I could feel an enormous weight being taken off of me. Master was baking my karma. He took it off of me, and I knew what was happening at the time, and I was just crying and crying and crying. Okay, anybody?
Can you hear? I guess you can hear me. All right. To back up just a little bit, back in 1972, I was 16, and Master came and came to Myers Park High School when he was in Charlotte. I found out many years later that he had given a talk in the auditorium. I was probably taking calculus across the courtyard, and that's about as close as I ever got to him. I had absolutely no idea that he was there until years later. But anyhow, I did get involved in Charlie Fulcher's Great Concepts class beginning in 1973, started following the precepts of the vegetarian diet and so forth, and then got off of that during the summer because I was too immature to continue with it, and then got interested again in the fall, and then in the spring of 74, had this overwhelming sensation that I had to get initiated, just kind of out of the blue. So I acted on it. I picked up the phone and called Charlie Fulcher, and he answered the phone. I think that's the only time in my life that Charlie actually answered the phone. Every other time, I think David had a reference of that, he would say, state the essence of your message, and I might get back to you. In any case, that was the typical response. So Charlie picks up the phone, and I said, I've got to get initiated. And he says, no, you don't. I said, no, I really do. I really have to. And he says, you're not ready. You're not mature enough. You need to go to college. You need to get married. You need to, there's any number of things you need to do besides get initiated. I said, no, I'm very persistent about this. He had seen me be very persistent in the Great Concepts classes about pursuing a question. He finally gave in and made the recommendation. And I went through the process of filling out the brief life sketch and everything, sent that in. And at the end of July, got a response from Mr. Connell. So I called Charlie again. And he answered the second time. This would probably be about August 2nd or 3rd. And I said, I got accepted. I want to get initiated. I think, will you give me the instructions? No. Why not? Well, I think Mr. Connor should do it. I thought, okay, well, we can go to Washington, I guess. So he comes and gets me. He has his little Volkswagen Bug. He comes to my house on Queens Road West. Pardon me? Squareback, yes, it was. Yes, it was. And yellow, if I remember. Okay. And there was this long, we had a fairly long driveway beside the front yard, and there was liriope planted on the left-hand border. Charlie, as you might know, drove everywhere, but in this particular instance, he was backing back down the driveway with me into it, and he ran over quite a bit of the liriope. So I remarked on it. He got out and stuck the plants back in the ground and got back in. I said, don't you want to come in the house and wash your hands off? No. Didn't want to do that. I said, all right. So we drive along. A little while later, he makes that characteristic motion that you might have seen Master do, where he kind of does his hands like that. And, of course, all the, you know, just washes them off. And there was no more dirt on his hands. Incidentally, the liriope didn't suffer at all. It grew abundantly. And you couldn't tell it had ever been run over. We went up by way of Chapel Hill, where he customarily would go, and we had a pizza, as he customarily did, with double cheese and onions, but uncut, and he would cut about half of it and fold it over and stuff the whole thing in his mouth, which he did very characteristically. And we got back in the car and drove up to Washington. By this time, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. We came to Mr. Connor's house, and Bill Dawson came out to greet us. I was embarrassed that we were arriving at that time of the night, and Bill thought that there was nothing to it. He said that this was when he got up in the morning to meditate, so it was perfectly all right. And we got settled in for a few hours. The next morning, Charlie presents me to Kana, and Kana says that he doesn't want to give me the instructions. And I couldn't understand that at all. So time goes by, and I'm in, I guess, just a state of confusion. And out of nowhere, Jimmy Alexander comes driving up, and apparently he and Charlie had arranged that Helen McDaniel would give the instructions. So he drove me over to where she lived, and I went inside and saw pictures of Master all over the wall, and I and one other lady, young woman, got initiated, and I got the names, and I had an experience, and came back, and talked to Charlie later on that night. There was an episode where I had been reading in the Sarbuchan about some of the lower body chakras, and I asked him, because I was confused quite how all that worked, and his comment was perhaps important. He said not to worry about it, because he was only interested in the subtlest of the subtle. So I said, okay, so noted. So we got the car the next day and drove back to Charlotte. At one point, after a fairly long stretch, I looked over at him and I said, you drive like this frequently. You drive from Charlotte to Washington, up to Philadelphia, all kinds of places, and you're usually by yourself or with one other person. What do you do during that time? Because we weren't playing the radio or anything like that. So I like to listen to the sound current. I thought, that's a good answer. Anyway, time goes on. I went about my business. In fact, did go to college, did get married, married Sally's mother, who was an initiate, of course. And back in 1995, 6, in Charlotte, we had a master's birthday celebration. We had a satsang at our house. And both Charlie and Jimmy happened to be in attendance, along with my wife and Sally and my son Bill. I thought you were there.
I heard about
it. Okay, I thought you were there. Anyway, Charlie and Jimmy were there. So somehow or another, the topic of how did you happen to get initiated came up. So I told them my story. And as I was telling them the story, Charlie sits back and roars, I wasn't there. If you've ever known Charlie, that's he's pretty definite about how he states things. And, of course, Jimmy felt the same way. He was pretty agitated, as both of them were, in fact, in India at the time. August of 74, and in fact, I had never made the connection for those 20 years. I had even gone back after being initiated and had satsang in maybe around the 1st of September. Charlie and Jimmy were there with luggage on the floor and looking very sad, and I said, whatever's wrong? And they told me that Master had left the body, and I said, well, that's not any fun. I mean, that's terrible. I was hoping I'd meet him someday, physically. Anyway, so that's pretty much the story. Master took it upon himself to make an incarnation of Charlie and Jimmy and possibly Bill Dawson, I'm not even sure. For my benefit, I can't possibly explain that. But that's my story.
You showed them your initiation
paper. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I they were a little bit incredulous, as you might imagine. So I went and got my paper that showed where I had been accepted and signed by Connor. One other little bit. A few weeks later, Charlie and I and Jeff Odom, Frodo, went up to Washington because Charlie had coerced him to get initiated. He didn't particularly want it, but he got it. And while we were there, I was, of course, hoping that I might be able to sit on the initiation because that was a traditional thing, sort of a refresher. And Mr. Connell looked at me like I had three heads and said, "You'd be a distraction. You can't sit here." He didn't know who I was. He'd never met me before.
I never heard that.
Or at least if he had met me, he didn't remember it. But in any case, he would not allow me to sit in on Jeff's initiation. And I was even more confused for a few years.
Unbeknownst to everyone here, we have another guest who's not here in body. Jim Alexander's been listening in on his phone. He wants to go next.
Hello, everyone. I am so sorry that I was not able to come and join you in person. But I'm so delighted to be taking part of this. I would like to give you the other side of that story that John Tracy just told you, because it was true.
I'm sorry, I'm making a joke. You're going to tell the truth of what happened. No, I'm kidding.
So it was a little bit later. We started having, over several years, we'd have about two or three times a year, we would have weekends where we would remember and get together and remember Master. And it was at one of these, and we would have satsangs over at Charlie's house and also John and Carol's house. And John and Carol would often host us for a Saturday night dinner. So it was at one of these Saturday night dinners at this event of John telling us how he met the Master. And during the course of this, and John at the time told us whatever the dates were, and Charlie had been in India most of the summer and didn't return until about a week or two after these events that John described. And I was there at the time when Master passed from his physical form and ended his mission on the earth plane. So Charlie and I mean, it's like, whoa. I mean, we're sitting there because we know, you know, Charlie knew it was not he that was picking John up and running over his grass and the flowers. And I was nowhere near Washington, D.C., and I have never been to Helen McDaniel's house. So as John is telling the story, my eyes are just getting big, and it's just like, oh, wow, this is just, you know, this is an incredible, incredible thing that's happening. And then when John finished his story and Charlie and I informed him where we were, John tells it quite calmly now, but John was flabbergasted, absolutely flabbergasted. And he actually ran back to his bedroom, pulled out all his diary sheets and his, you know, all the documents he had about his initiation just to confirm the dates. He was so flabbergasted with it. So it was quite a remarkable evening and quite a wonderful illustration of how Master works beyond time and space and in whatever form he needs to get his mission done. So while I have the phone, I just actually want to say one other thing or two. And if you've already talked about this, my apologies. But first of all, this is the 30th anniversary of our retreat at Lake Chumaleska, 1996. And we actually ever started coming to Lake Chumaleska because of Joanna Swanson. So thank you, Joanna. And the other bit of historical information that would be useful is that these nights where we have memories of Master arose during that first and then also the second retreat we had at Lake Chumaleska in 1998, where Steve Mellick would go out on the second floor balcony and sit down in a rocker, and people would gather around him, and he'd start talking about Master. And so at some point we said, well, let's just bring all this inside and have these kind of a regular part of our of our session. So I think one of the first memories I have, Steve was talking about the time that he was in India with Master at the time of Raghavacharya's passing. And he followed, and I think you may have, there are either photographs or videos of this, Master going down the steps at Hardwar to the entrance to Raghavacharya's ashram. And then they went into the room where Raghavacharya's body was there. And Steve tells the story, told the story wonderfully. That Master says, look, something like the owner or the soul is gone. It's just the body now. And I've misquoted that, but that was the essence of it. So it was thanks to Joanna for telling us what a lovely place Lake Junaluska is. Thanks to Steve Melick and all his wonderful stories that inspired us to share our own over these years. And we've had some great ones. And thanks to all of you for being there. I wish I could be with you, but I'm happy to listen in further. Thank you all.
Thank you, Jim. All right, well, we'll carry on. Who wants to go next? Thank you.
Hey, Jim Alexander, this is Ryan Carnegie. And I'm going to tell the story that you recorded at Charlie Fochel's house. It's half of the story. It's so long. But in 1971, after I graduated from two universities, I became a hippie and decided to move to Nantucket in 71 and found a pamphlet on Main Street about a man called Baba Ram Dass. And I read that, and it tweaked my spiritual something in there. So anyway, I read his story about him being in Germany. I mean, I'm in India, I'm sorry. And he had a picture of a certain person. And about a week later, I kept reading the pamphlet and got more into it. And I knew that the guru he was talking about had a long white beard. So I just happened to go by the hub, which is where people put stuff on board for work and stuff. I said, well, there's a guru with a long white beard. And so I said, I'm going to look into that. So to make a long story short, turned out it was a Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. But I did get initiated. And for about a year, I did my 20 minutes a day. And I started seeing a few things here and there while I was meditating. And I asked his major people. They had no clue what I was talking about. So I continued, went back to South Carolina, where I had just graduated from college, and started working. And then a friend of mine asked me if I wanted to go back to Nantucket. And I said, I can't. I'm working. He said, Ryan, I'll pay for it. We'll be there 3 days. We'll be back. He said, who knows? You might meet your wife. I said, all right, we'll do that. I can do that. So we flew up to Nantucket, went around and saw him, found him, and Tom and I went to a place called This Is That House. It's where a lot of hippie people could stay when they got there and they didn't have the money to rent a place. So we went there, and I met this woman, and we got along well. So Tom said, well, why don't we go to the beach? So we went to the beach one day, and it was a pretty rough part of Ovanir Beach, which is on the Atlantic side, which can have very high waves. And I was a very good body surfer, and I was an ocean lifeguard. But anyway, it was me and Tom sitting on the beach, and I went out to body surf a bit. And this gigantic wave came up, and it twisted me around, and I didn't know where I was, and dropped me 8 feet onto my head, and I broke my neck. So eventually, I was taken to the hospital. And the man that was there, he looked at the x-ray, he didn't see anything. So he sent me back to where we were staying. And then the next morning, the lady we were rooting from yelled and said, is Ryan Carnegie up there? And she said, yes. She says, we just got a call from the hospital and an orthopedic surgeon that would, out of his courtesy, would just check the x-rays when he would come over. And he saw that I had broken my neck, had a compound fracture. and I was in bad shape. And so said he's got to come back to the hospital right away. So I went to the hospital, put me in traction. I stayed there for 3 weeks. One of the ladies that was in this and that house was working at the hospital, and somebody, one of the nurses said, "Have you seen the man in there with a broken neck?" I have really long hair, and I look pretty good, I guess. And she said no. But she came in, and turned out, I'll just shorten this, she did become my first wife. You can't make this up. So I had to be sent back to North Carolina and stay in my parents' house. So I had a broken neck. I was in traction in my old bedroom, and I was laying there. And so I was still doing my TM. But I knew that they didn't know what I was asking about, so I said, this must be a stepping stone or something. So a good friend of mine was the president of the people in Greensboro. We have a hippie section there, and they were overdosing. So he came in because he was dating a friend of mine from high school. And he came in, and we used to talk a few things. He knew I was into yoga and different things like that. So he came back about a week or so later, and he said, this lady came, and she volunteered to help with the overdose people. And her sister is an initiative, this man. So he said, I started looking at him. He said, Ryan, you know so much about this stuff already. You've learned this. You don't be crazy about this book. So he hands me The Crown of Life. So, of course, I look at it, and I started reading it. And every day and every night, I was pleading with God to please send me my real guru. The more I read that book, the more I was stunned. And the man was so beautiful. And I said, well, maybe this is God's response to me, that he has sent me this. But I'm in North Carolina with a broken neck in my parents' house, and this man lives in India. How's that going to work? So I gave him the book back. About 2 weeks later, he came around and he said, you know the man that wrote that book, Ryan? I said, yeah. He said, he's going to be in Charlotte, North Carolina in 2 weeks. That's 90 miles away from my parents' house. So we went, my brother, me, a couple of other people, Steve, and we went to Charlotte, Charlie Fortress house, and we stayed there for 3 days. I got initiated at Charlie's house on October 5th, 1972. And then we followed Master all around Florida. So I've had a little few doubts now and then through the years. I've always said I have never been able to talk myself out of that miraculous. It took two broken necks for him to slow me down, but he did.
This is a little incident that happened when I was in India, and this was during the Unity Man Conference, I think in January preceding it. Yogi Bhajan was there also, not at that time, but he was there for the conference. Was that what you were talking about, Rudy?
Yes.
January 74?
Yes.
Okay. Well, this happens to involve Master going to Phil's room as well. And so I'd been there for a few months at that point, and I was doing a lot of seva, getting organizing food for the Westerners. And I hope I didn't tell this story last year. But anyway. Yeah. So this is, so basically I would figure out how many buckets of what and how many kilos of bananas and all that kind of stuff, and I'd carry it over. So this is in the evening, the light was a little dim, that light in the courtyard, and it was kind of hazy, and there were a bunch of people gathered around, and Master was starting to walk that way. Phil was actually sick at that time. And so I had an armful of empty buckets, and because I was just on my way to the Langar to pick up food, and so Master's walking along, standing there with my buckets off to the side, and he sees me, and he walks over towards me with this twinkle in his eye. I can't, a real twinkle. And he reaches out. He reaches out and he flicks his finger against the bucket. So I can hear this metallic ting, and he's looking into my eyes. And I just completely lost all self-awareness. I was dancing. I think I was twirling around with my bucket, and I ended up on the other side of him somehow. And he's following me with his eyes the whole time. And he's got this huge smile on his face. It's almost like his head is separated from his body. Just this big head and his eyes, nothing else, just floating in front of me and just pouring this kind of, like, it was just this moment where he carried me to a place where I could understand him at a little bit different level. I could actually share in just a touch of that bliss that he lives in and has to offer all of us. And he was enjoying my joy so much. And I don't know how long that lasted, maybe a couple of seconds or whatever. I started to become self-aware again, unfortunately. I thought, oh, there I am somehow off on the wrong side in the middle of this crowd with the master. And I thought, well, okay, I'm self-aware now. I have to. It's no longer honest for me to stand here like this, so I need to move back to the side. But it's kind of like, the cloak being pulled over me again and kind of being separated from that bliss. But it was such a beautiful moment. And Master's just playfulness and his sense of humor and just surprising actions. Sometimes you just don't expect this right out of the blue. He just does something like that. Anyway, that's... it's seared into my being, that lovely little moment.
I'll tell you a little bit about the biography, Love, Light, and Life. In 2010, Eileen Wig asked me to come to her house, and they'd been working on this book for a long time, and I was prepared to tell her that Rahani Satsang could not handle the distribution of the book because everyone writes books, and so what? We are Kirpal Singh only. But to kind of slow things down, I just asked her, why did they write the book? And she said, oh, it's in the preface, it's Master's orders. He told us to write it, and on, stuff like that. So that changed everything. That made the evening much, much more pleasant. And I brought the book to this retreat, and Jim Alexander read from it, and we announced it and stuff like that. Within 7 months, we'd sold 1,000 books. We had a special website set up just for that one book. And I would... Started meeting with Eileen Wig at Starbucks just to let her know how the book was doing. But then we found out that we liked each other. We were kind of friends, you know, it was good fun. So, but the thing that I learned is I did not ask her questions. If you ask her questions, she'd kind of clam up. But if you just let her talk, eventually you'd be at the ashram. And the thing that I was learning was, how does Master handle a difficult situation? Because, of course, you know, Rani said, saying, we do have difficult situations, and well, we can do it our way, or maybe Master will help us, and maybe we'll do it his way. One of the stories she told, like, when she first got to the ashram, she was there for about a year and didn't have any responsibilities. But at the time, they were publishing Satsandish in the Indian languages. So she went to Master and said, you know, there should be an English Satsandish. The people in the West want to know what's going on. And his response was, well, you'd better get busy on that. So at one point she was dealing with the folks who were printing the book, and there was a dispute, probably about money. And Eileen was right, you know. That's just the way it was, you know. They had screwed up somehow or other, but, you know. So anyway, they took it to Master, and Master blasted her. This is not a business. And so, you know, a couple of days go by, and he hunts her down. She was hiding under her bed, probably. He asked her if she was okay, and by that time, she realized she had got the whole Master power. Bang, right. And it gave her something she'd have the rest of her life. So she was very, very happy about that. But listening to her talk about it, in whatever thing, you were at the ashram. You were there. The coffee helped, certainly, but still, it was wonderful. I'll just close with one little anecdote. In Penticton, Edna Scheinrock and Stanley Scheinrock set things up, and we had a meditation hall there and things like that. I had known Edna in Toronto, and so we could talk to each other. She told me one story that stuck with me. She was in charge of the Westerners, where they, you know, lived and, you know, make sure they're okay, this and that. But she was the one that told them when they were going home. So she was extremely unpopular. I've been in groups where people would be talking about how Edna was the worst person on the planet. And they meant it, because she kicked them out. And, of course, what would happen is you go to the ashram, you'd be there a week or two, and then you started going shopping, and it became a tourist thing, and that's when she kicks you out. So at one point, she went to Master, asked, someone else should do this job. This is a horrible job. They all hate me. And Master said, if you don't do it, who will? I can't. And when you think of Master saying, I can't, that's not a job you want. Thank you.
I have some memories that I would like to relate about October the 5th, 1972, in Charlie Fulcher's living room. Okay, I think there were about 14 of us being initiated that day, and we were sitting on the floor, most of us, and in Charlie's living room, he had a sofa, and I think there were about four people being initiated there. And at the time that he was giving the sound instructions, you know, I was having a lot of trouble, like, because I had never sat on the floor. I was like just turned 21, and I was in a lot of pain trying to sit cross-legged. But I was sitting at his feet, and he saw me trying to do the position, and he saw I was doing it wrong, and he took his hand and put it on my shoulder and pushed me down back on my butt, you know. Said, well, you just be like here like that. And can you hear me? And these are the main memories I have. Is there was a man about my age, I guess early 20s, and his arm was in a cast all the way up to his shoulder. And it was kind of like that. And so during the, you know, he looked at Master, well, I can't get my thumb to my ear. Master walked around behind the sofa and put his right thumb in his ear to give him the sound experience. And the other thing, there was a gentleman, a Sikh gentleman, that if you could imagine, like, you know, just a magnificent Sikh warrior, you know, he was there standing up in the middle of the room and giving it, when he was giving the words out, you know, we were trying to repeat. It was kind of, you know, difficult. And he had the Sikh gentleman repeat the five words, and it was just such a powerful experience. The way, you know, he was given, Master asked him to, you know, give out the words. So those are two dynamic experiences from October the 5th.
This is not a story, but just a brief comment relating to this being the 30th anniversary of being here. And it illustrates one example of Master directing the daily life, having to do with Joanna Swanson. She and her husband Richard were in Barrington, Illinois, and I don't remember exactly why they decided they were going to leave, but I think it may have been because when they came here, they set up, I don't know, other people may know the correct word, but people could come to their home for a stay, would have juice. It was, okay, but it was more than, at least she tried to make it be more of the juicing and health, helping people with health. But what she said was when they had to decide where they were going to move to, and she looked at a map, and there was a golden dot on Waynesville, and that's how they got to Waynesville. And then when she was here, she knew about Lake Junaluska and told Rohani Satsang.
I think because we're sharing sweet remembrance of Joanna, too, tonight, I want to share this little story that happened to us. For Mac's 50th birthday, we decided we were going to go to Joyce Kilmer Park. And we were traveling with our two little boys. And some satsangi friends of ours had told us, hey, you know, there's a vegetarian bed and breakfast down near there. You know, you should look into it. So I called and I made reservations. And we planned to stay there for a couple nights. And we walked in the front door. And all along the wall are all these pictures of Master Kripal. And I'm just sort of babbling, and I'm pointing at the pictures, and I said, that's my master. And it was Joanne. And she said, yeah, that's my master too. And I had never met her before. I had no idea. So we had a lovely stay there. And I still didn't know anything about Lake Junaluska at that point. And then later, I think through Ryan, we learned about this and started coming here. But since we're also remembering North Carolina, I'll share my story from North Carolina. When we were on the 72 tour, at that time I had been living in Denver, Colorado, so I had been going to satsang at Leon Ponset's group. And so because of that, I was traveling with the Colorado Sangat, and there were five of us women together in a little tiny Toyota. And he made arrangements for us to have a private audience with Master on Charlie Fulcher's front lawn. And this kind of harks back to what a couple of you have said about his humor and his twinkle. Because we were sitting on the grass in front of him. There may be, I don't know, 10 or 20 of us. And he was sitting in a chair. And Leon was introducing each of us by name. And he got to Chris Reinhardt. And he said, this is Chris Reinhardt. And just quick as a flash, Master looked at him and smiled and twinkled and said, what, not rhinoceros? And then, so we were visiting, you know, and having our private darshan with him. And then at some point, Mr. Khanna decided that was enough. And he said, all right, this is over now. Master needs his private time. And Master said, no, my private time is with you, my private people.
Well, hearing all these stories, I'm remembering
an insight that I had a long time ago, that all of us have a great wealth of memories of Natster. And when we get together, they all start flowing. And it's probably greater than we know. I want to tell one story that happened to me soon after I was initiated. I was initiated in July of 71 by Russell at Sampani Ashram. And, you know, in 1971, and then a lot so a lot of things happened in my life at that point. But I had graduated from college, and I was taking all these education courses because I wanted to be a teacher. And at that time, there was a shortage of men teachers from elementary school. And so I had gotten a job in Orono, Maine, teaching fifth grade, which was my first real teaching job. And then right after I got that, the tour was announced. And I couldn't go. I couldn't give up that job. If I had, you know, worked for a month and then quit, that would have been, you know, a bad record. I probably would have never been hired again. So my wife and I would go on weekends for the tour. We missed all of Sampani. We saw Master in New York. And then we saw him in Vermont. And then the last time was when he went to Burlington, Vermont. And we were there, and that was a long way to drive from Maine to Burlington. And he gave us satsang in the evening. And somehow there was, I guess there was a crowd, but they had made a, like they often do, there was a clear space down through the middle. So that's how Master entered and left. And so he went by. I was sitting pretty close up front, and I got a very nice view of him. But as he began to go down this long opening, something just welled up in me, and I said, is this the last time I'm going to see you? Because there was no time to go on all these other tours. We didn't have money to fly to Chicago on the weekend or something. So that just welled up in me. Master, is this the last time I'm going to see you? And he turned and looked at me and then went on off. And so I was, you know, I'd been initiated just a year and a half, but that was my first experience of seeing that Master knew your thought and that he cared about it.
Well, my dear brother was relating. When Master went to Vermont, it wasn't Burlington, Vermont. He went to the University of Vermont. Mm-hmm. And in Burlington, Vermont, it was the reason is that I was that was my school, an alumni of University of Vermont. And I'm tearing up because when I was there and Master was there at the University of Vermont, I was blissed out for 3 days. I was hugging trees. I mean, that's what I'd like to relate. And it still tears me up that there's just so much bliss that Master just radiated.
So much of what I'm thinking, it's been said already. And I just wanted to make a real quick plug for some of these wonderful prayer cards that John keeps sending to us. Especially in a minute, it's going to talk a little bit about separation. And I never understood this prayer card. If you remember him daily with an anguished heart, how blessed you become, unity exists. I'm going, anguished heart, separation. Yeah, unity exists, finally. And we're supposed to go jolly and be happy and not be negative. And when it hit me this year, that anguish is from the sense of separation. And then we have this promise, unity exists, just meant the world. Plus, this is best morning prayer on the back, Hafez, that you could ever have. I really encourage you to get these and read them. In the morning, when I began to wake, it happened again. That feeling that you, beloved, had stood over me all night, keeping watch.
that feeling that as soon as I began to stir, you put your lips on my forehead and lit a holy lamp inside my heart. That's a lovely morning prayer. After, and, of course, the one on humility. We have something to learn from everyone. And the one that's a wonderful promise, you know, keep more faith in the supreme power within you and things will happen that you can't even imagine. And a quick note about Edna. I've got a dear friend in Memphis. He's the saint of St. Jude Hospital with the children there. And he says, as far as enemies and as far as things like that, whoever you cannot bear in this life will be your roommate in heaven. So get prepared and you resolve it now. You've heard my bad stories about, you know, crises on buses going to see George and Margaret in Arkansas, and you've heard my sad stories about when my master died and things. And this is good and bad. My mother and I went. My mother was initiated probably in 68. I was in November of 69. So I hadn't been initiated that long. And Master was in St. Pete in 72. We were in Pensacola. So we flew down. Oh, I'm sorry. So we flew down to St. Pete. And he was talking that day at the hotel was a Sandpiper. And there was a great big general information thing. Big ballroom, lots of people. And afterwards, that was that night. And afterwards, several of us who were initiates, not just there for information, but we were waiting in the lobby, different small groups of people and some kind of circular thing that Mother and I were sitting on, and we were waiting. And his Sevadars, if I said that correctly, Pradeep, thank you, his Sevadars came down, leave. The master's tired. We, you know, go. We're sitting there. And getting late. We'd had a big day. And they come down again. Go. You know, master's tired. So my mind is telling me, you know, these are his people. And they're telling us to go. I was not one of his people. I'm tired, and we'll see him tomorrow, we know, in initiation the next day. And, you know, my mother wanted to stay. And my mind is doing the whole physical, worldly, rational things. You leave now. Everybody's tired. They've come down three times in the elevator and told you to go. Now. And by that time, mother and I and maybe two or three other people were there. I finally talked my mother into leaving. We go to initiation the next day because they let initiates sit in, as we just mentioned, on the initiation. And one thing about sound, I didn't know what to do with sound at first at all. You know, I was just, and we were doing bhajan, and I opened my eyes and I saw Master grab a woman's hand and move it in her ear, and I went, oh, good, I can adjust this, you know, because I just thought that was it, and I couldn't move, and I couldn't do anything and hear anything, and I saw him adjust it. But anyway, that's not the point. The point is, we found out after initiation that morning that Master had come down late that night, 10:30, 10:45, 11 o'clock, and said, where are my children? Where are my children? So that night after the talk, we're not going anywhere. Anywhere. And they're not telling us anything. And there weren't very many of us there at that time, 20. And it was he came outside. They made a chair, and they came outside, and it was a very pretty small patio kind of thing, probably not a third of the size of this room. Or less, and it was right by the parking lot. You know, I have no idea what he said. I wish I remembered. I had no idea about anything. He was just there. Oh, I forgot to tell you the first of this story. I have to tell you this. When he came, when we went to St. Petersburg to the airport, and he came,
he wasn't that tall. For me, I'm tall. Broad shoulders, big head, broad shouldered, barrel-chested, and stern. Stern. And he's walking down the aisle, and he's looking at people, and I know now that's important. He's looking at them and looking, and they're like, but I mean, this is one stern fellow. I'm like, this is my master. Good. But boy. And then when I saw him later, it was at Sunny Cowan's in her backyard. I don't know if I tell you, I mean, he was looking at me, and I turned toward him, and he was just looking at me, and he's like looking a hole right through me. You know, he's just looking. And I'm just, So anyway, and then we don't see him that one night. And he's, you know, at initiation and stuff, he's doing his thing. He's not falling all over people and, you know. So that Darshan was wonderful. He was right there. And he came out and he was just happy. There wasn't any particular light around him. There wasn't, but he was just smiling and happy. And he was glad we were there. And we had not been there the night before. And all I can tell you is that when he left, I got up and I was drunk as a skunk. I couldn't walk. I almost got hit in the parking lot by a car. And at the time, I was not aware this was going on. When I was sitting there, I wasn't aware of what his darshan was doing. But when I got up, you know, it really hit. And my lesson from this is, Sally, what we were talking about on one of the CDs, Master says, our Master, he says, talking about dear Sawan, our Master says, sit at the gate, sit at the door and wait. And that night we should have sat at the door and waited.
My memories of Master, I have been, I don't even remember when I started, maybe 14, 15 years old, always in search of something. And my stepmother, she would leave books out, and I think she did it on purpose because we were pretty strict Christians. But she would leave books out of Edgar Casey and things like this, and I would be reading them. And I'm like, wow, you know, this is pretty interesting. And I always... doing all this research, and I read autobiography of a yogi and this, that, and the other thing. And so when I got married, my mother-in-law, she knew that I was in search of something, and she said she cut out in the paper where Master was coming to Fort Lauderdale, Gald el-Shamayl. And she cut it out, and she goes, I think I need to give you this. And I said, okay, I looked at it and I turned to my husband, I said, I'm going to go. You want to come? And he's like, okay, you know. So we went, and it was very difficult to park. We were driving around, so we're kind of on the late side. You know, you kind of want to be a little bit early, you know, sitting there when he comes in and everything. But we got there, and it was so much confusion, everybody was running around. I'm like, where are we supposed to sit? What are we doing? And all of a sudden, I heard this voice. It was a woman's voice saying, Master's coming, Master's coming. And I turned around, and he was coming through the door. And he looked at me, and he went. And I was like, what just happened? I didn't know what, you know, I wasn't sure what was happening. And, of course, my husband was standing next to me. He didn't experience anything. But in the meantime, he was looking around, and he said, these people are a little bit strange. I don't know. I think they're a little bit strange. I think that, you know, he's telling me all this stuff. And in the meantime, after he was talking, he talked about going to Birch State Park. And I'm like, I'm trying to think, now how am I going to get out of work? Oh, and I don't want him to know that I'm going because he's going to say some negative thing. You know, I'm trying to figure out, well, I never got to go to the park to see him again. But about a month or two later, he says a friend of his knew of this meeting. And he said, well, I want you to talk to her. She might have something to tell you.
And I'm thinking, why would I want to talk to her about spirituality? I can't imagine her knowing anything about it. And I'm like, oh, all right, I'll give it a chance, you know. So I listened to her, and she goes, we'll go to this meeting. And that. I'm like, okay, I'll go with you, you know. Miami Satsang. The girl I ended up being friends with for many years, and I originally didn't like her because she was a little bit different than I wanted to hang around with. But at any rate, everything turned out. And I went to the Miami Satsang for many months. And then Astra usually left in the summer to go to India. So she wasn't there, and I found out about Fort Lauderdale Satsang. I went to Fort Lauderdale. I'm like, I'm just going to drink up as much as I can. And so during the summer, for some reason, we had to move to Deerfield, which is a lot farther away. And I found out about Lake Worth. So all the while I was going to Miami Satsang, nobody asked me this, but I walked into Lake Worth, and after the Satsang, a gentleman came up to me and said, are you initiated? And I said, no. The whole time I was in the other Satsang, nobody ever asked me that. And he goes, oh my gosh, you've got to be initiated. Now, mind you, I have been a vegetarian for many years because I was studying all this stuff. And so I was all ready, you know. I'm thinking, I think I can do this, you know. So I filled out the paperwork. The next week, I turned it in. And in the meantime, you know, things happened, and it was August. Now this was in '74. I can't remember the month. I'm thinking it was more like in probably it had to be in June because Astra wasn't there. So. All this time, I'm thinking, well, it's probably going to take a long time and all this other kind of stuff. Well, then all of a sudden, it came that Master left. And I found out going to the Fort Lauderdale Satsang. And I was sitting going, oh, my gosh. And I felt like the whole world just collapsed. I was like, what in the world am I going to do now? I'm sitting there. And the only thing that I could feel was Master saying, it's okay. Just do what you're doing. Just keep going. Do what you're doing. I got up and I said, okay, I'm just going to keep on going to Satsang. Just do whatever I'm doing. And so I worked for Publix at the time. And I get this. Somebody said, you got a phone call. You need to call this guy back. He really wants you to call you back today. Okay, all right. You know. So I go to the front of the store where the payphone is. And it was, you know, Jim calling me back saying, you've been accepted verbally. I screamed in front of Publix. And I think everybody stopped for a second. I was so excited. So basically, I was initiated November 1974. And never, I can't imagine ever having the most beautiful time in my life.
I'll say something quickly. I got initiated in September 1973. Unbeknownst to me and Olivia, we might have been in the same room at the same time by Etta Perrin. Anyway, that was a surprise. We found that out last year. We believe we were there together. I think there were six or seven of us. In a semicircle. Yeah, we kind of went through it together, and we think we were both there at the same time. That's really strange. And when I was, I went to the Fort Lauderdale Women's Club. That was where I went for the meetings. And Master passed away within that year. But Etta and Phil, I stopped doing the satsangs because he was ill and she couldn't make it, so their health was declining. So they handed it over to a lady by the name of Benta. And Benta was very beautiful soul, I have to say. But she was very persistent. I would sit way in the back by myself, just wanting to be out of sight, out of mind type person. And she kept pointing at me. I want you to come up and do the benediction. Read it. I said, I don't want to. I don't want to do that. And then she kept saying, no, no, come, come, come. So everyone's staring at me. I thought, oh. So I went up there. I was like shaking, you know, like, And all I can remember to this day is these things. The master said to his children, make the best use of your time, for time is running out. It's hard for me to say this. I beg with you, I plead with you to meditate, because no one before me or after me will feel the love and passion for you that I have done. I think that was the words. Master told his children countless times, make the best use of your time, for time is running out. I beg with you, I plead with you to meditate. No one before me and no one after me will have the love and compassion for you as I have done.
I just wanted to say, I wanted to also say thank you to Olivia. I know I'm probably the last one who's going to say something. Maybe Olivia will say something, but it is such a beautiful event. I look forward to this every year, and I think all of us here feel the same way. There's a joy and there's a sadness almost at the same time, and it's reinforcing of something you already know. And I think that's why Master had us meditate every day and have our own personal satsangs. Somebody asked me earlier today if we had a satsang where I live, and I said, no, it's just me. But, I mean, God bless the fact that David runs this Sunday and Wednesday night, you know, satsangs that are just so perfect, you know. So, and yes, of course. And a lot of people have asked me about Martha, you know, and they not explained that she passed this last January. And it was such a beautiful reinforcement of Master's blessing. Just the fact that, you know, she had seen Master on the inside, and that lifted my heart. And she was so dedicated to his understandings. And when she was passing, her daughter, I've said this to a couple of people, but I just, you know, I've heard people say, oh, my dad saw Master, or my sister saw Master, and they were initiated. And she did see Master when she was leaving the body. And I was laying right next to her, and I turned on the side because she had that heavy breathing, and she had the death rattle that we'd heard about, and I'd never experienced that before. And Master put me to sleep. I was going to watch her till the end, and her daughter came in and you know, shook me and said, look, Mommy's gone. And I thought, what a blessing. It was a beautiful, without drugs, without hospice, you know, none of the drugs that hospice tends to, you know, use all the time. And I just felt so grateful and so thankful that, and I think all of us, and I don't mean this to sound patronizing, but I don't see how we can go a second without appreciating how great our Master is. And it just fills my heart because we're all, you know, I think Sally may be the youngest of us all, but, you know, I'm right in there close. So, you know, how much longer we have, I don't know. And as crazy as the world is, we just have to carry our light and live up to what Master asks of us. And that's sort of a prayer I have daily with myself. And I think we all have our own personal approaches to that. But what a blessing. I felt so thankful to have been in the Miami Satsang. Astra was an interesting person, to say the least, and she loved Master about as much as anybody I ever met. And she'd kind of whack you on the head if she thought you were out of line. And she, you know, there's this an expression in Spanish, I don't have any hairs on my tongue. That was Astra. But, and Rudy and I got initiated together. That was a pretty special day. You know, I don't know if you experienced it, but when I was walking up to the women's hall, I think it was, in Fort Lauderdale, and Women's Club, and not a cloud in the sky, and it started raining. I mean, just right over the building, and I had to cover my head, and I didn't think anything about it, and that was a Sunday. Well, Monday we had satsang, and Astra says, she said, did anybody notice it was raining? You know, and I said, yeah, I did. She says, well, that was Baba Sawant's blessing. So there's just, all of us can account the reinforcement that Master gives us all the time, and so we just got to keep, you know, doing our meditations. If Master said one thing a million times, it was, how's your meditations? Keep meditating. And that's the only salve that we have. God bless. So thank you, Father.
Thank you for all these stories of your opportunity to meet Master. I never actually got to meet him, but I was initiated by Etta Perrin. I was actually in St. Croix and went to Virginia to see my sister. At the same time, Master was on tour in the United States
and then Washington, D.C. I was involved in a car accident that stopped traffic. I was a passenger, and I went through the windshield of the car. Master was actually there at the same time that happened. And I always think that he was probably stuck in traffic because of that accident. And through some magic, I was able to get back to St. Croix. And that is when I met Soulevay Pennock, who had just come back from Miami. And she was the one who shared Master to me. And I went to the satsang that night, and I opened up the book, and everything he was saying, I said, this is what I know to be true. Everything he said, this is the right thing. And so because of Etta Perrin, I kept saying, oh, well, I don't know if I'm worthy enough. And Etta waved her hand in front of me and said, oh, that's the negative power. I said, okay. Okay. And then when I met my husband and we decided to get married, Charlene Sherwin held, we thought we were just going to her house for dinner, but it turns out she was having an engagement party. And so the doorbell kept ringing and people kept coming and people kept coming. And John will tell you the rest of the story.
There was at one point when the party was engaged on the couch, as God is my witness, Master was sitting there. And that is the second time that I met him. Or I should say the first. There was two times that I've actually engaged in conversation with him. And Olivia has never told me to tell the story, but we had gone through some turmoil with selling our company to my family, which was devastating. And it caused my wife to get out of the business, and she was going through some very emotional things. Anyhow, the long and the short of it is that one night, Olivia had decided that she was going to bed and she would not wake up the next day. Okay, and I did not know this. And in the middle of the night, I woke up, and standing beside her side of the bed was Master Kirpal Singh. And I spoke with him, and I said, are you here to take her? And he said, no. I'm here to tell her that everything is going to be okay.
This was before I was initiated. Yeah. No, I was just an. Yeah, I was work. I was living in New York City at the time, and I had some friends. Well, they weren't really good friends, but anyway, they were friends in the village area. And we were going to paint, you know, so he gave me a whole box of paints, and we're going to paint at his house, one of his friends' houses. And it was in the backyard, so I couldn't find a front way to get in, but I knew he was on the third floor. So I can see from the back way that there was a fire escape going up to the third floor. So I threw the paint bush, with the box over the fence, climbed over the fence, and there was a light shining on this road, this pathway leading right to the fire escape. So I figured it was all level all across. When I walked, the first step I took was right in midair. It was about 8 foot down into an alley, you know, knife. But I was falling, and all of a sudden, I was out of the body. I was just out of the body, and when I hit the ground, I didn't feel a thing. There was no pain, no nothing. So I knew that Most people think that when you crash in an airplane or something like that, most of the people are out of their body already. You know? Yeah, so well, that was it. But afterwards, then the pain came back, you know. But afterwards, yeah, afterwards the pain came back, and they had police there and everybody, they were taking pictures. There he is, the burglar of Paris, you know, was that. All right, but
the art burglar,
right? Yeah, so yeah, yeah. But anyway, that was before. But yeah, it's a funny scene. Yeah.
I would like to thank John Giuziano, our Superwoman's chauffeur. Some of us may have noticed he's walking a little slower these days. And I want to say that it's been it was a tremendous body of work for him to drive from Sarasota to here. Thank you. Thank you so much for bringing our Superwoman here and back home. Thank you. Oh, I have a quick story. One time during the tour, Master would leave at one airport. And we would get in a car and we would race to the next airport if we could make it in the same time frame. Well, this chap who was driving, he was speeding. I mean, very, very fast. And the woman next to me in the back, she tapped the woman in the passenger seat and said, "Tell him to slow down." She did, but he did not slow down. And after a few moments, she tapped her again and vehemently said, "Tell him to slow down." She told him, and he did. Moments later, the semi-truck that was to the diagonal of where we were here, and there was a truck, came swerving across the road and finally righted itself. The woman started crying and very emotional, and she said, "I saw what was to happen to us. We were supposed to be next to that semi-truck and over the bank."
Well, I hope that we have little time and little things. I'll take off on Scott, what he was talking about, Baba Savan Singh's blessings and rains. I have had the fortune of attending more than 20 different retreats, I mean in different locations, and not once it has ever happened that Baba Savan Singh didn't show his presence with a little rain. Not once. Today, yes? Yes? Yes. And the other thing which I wanted to say is that, you know, we all, with all good intentions, say that, okay, we're going for this retreat and we're so excited about it. Now, that's up to us to go to the retreat. But whether we attend the retreat or not is a separate matter altogether. And that's Master's decision. We went for a retreat to Scotland. I don't know if John was there. And what happened was that, like, where we reached one day earlier, and if the retreat is going to be held here, for one night we stayed about, say, 200 yards away. And we were then moving from that place to the retreat place, just 200 yards. And you know the English weather, Scottish weather, it started raining. And by the time we came to the retreat, I had such bad cough, such bad flu. I was there, but I was not allowed to attend the retreat. So, I mean, it's Master's grace that you can attend the retreat. You can come, but whether you attend or not, in my opinion, it is Master's grace. And people may be wondering, why is this guy not talking about any of his personal experiences? My fact is that I met Master eye to eye for only less than 30 seconds maybe. And I was then 16, and Master looked into my eyes, I was zapped. And Master said in Hindi that you're working. I said, no, Master, I'm going to give my high school examination. But he retreated, no, you're working. And I was so zapped, I didn't say nothing. But lo and behold, I go back, finish my exams, and I start working immediately. And many of you know that even now, I had a small business, and twice I tried to give away the business so that I can devote more time to spiritual practices and things like that, you know. Both the times, it keeps coming back to me. It seems that now it's hitting me that I'm supposed to work, perhaps, you know, and it is Master's doing that I'm not being able to palm it off. Believe me, I gave away my business free of cost to people, and still it comes back. Thank you very much, Ripley, and I need to thank especially John for one very simple thing. What Master said this morning, for example, in his speech, in his talk, that it is an honor to get seva. And the seva that Master has given me is something which I really treasure. It's an honor for me, and I thank David and Christine for tolerating all my
I've got one secret I would like to pass on. Olivia and I have a little prayer that we give every time we get into the car, whether it's going to the grocery store or going to Lake Junaluska with another companion. And that is, around our bodies and from our head to our toes, dear Master, please protect us with your heavenly glow. A kiss for luck, and we're on our way. Master, please bless our journey today. It's work every day.
I have to say, this has been a wonderful retreat for me personally because of Sally and Anelia. You've made my work a breeze. It was a breeze. So thank you for taking such a load on your shoulders. Thank you.
Okay, I said this before, but Master's telling me, love yourself. Remember that. Just love yourself.
I just want to say that it is Master who blesses us when we are allowed to serve him. And that's such an incredible blessing. And, you know, Master says that if any good flows from us, it is his grace that is working. We are just mere pipes.
Of course, what I'm going to say is not new to anybody, but I'm listening to all the stories and then remembering Master's words when he says that the decision to be initiated is actually before we're born. And when we look at all of the stories, the things that should have, could have, would have, the things that happened or didn't happen, he's been with us. He's been with us every day. Every day. We just had to wait until it was time. And that's all.
Well, Olivia's comment just sparked this memory in me. How the Master or God or whoever plays with children at that tender age. And I remember I was in New Brunswick. I was 7 or 8 years old, and it was the springtime, and me and a couple of my pals were busy, you know, chasing baby birds that were learning to fly and stuff, and hadn't had any luck catching any, but we wanted them for pets. Fortunately, we didn't catch any. But I was standing on the stoop of my house, and they were down at the bottom. And I just said spontaneously, I will believe in God if a baby goldfinch immediately flies over beside the stoop and I jump down and catch it. And then I said, no, I will believe in God if two baby goldfinch immediately fly next to the stoop and I jump down and catch it. Literally within 2-3 seconds, two of them right down there. I took off my jacket, jumped down, threw the jacket on top, and I caught them. My mother made me let them go, but I just thought that was that was just God playing. I was already a theist, I think, but that certainly helped.
Even before, when my husband and I were dating, we were driving along, and in those days, didn't have the bucket seats. You had all one seat. So I was sitting next to him, you know. He's my first boyfriend. And I thought, oh. I said, and we were driving along. And I'd only been dating him a couple weeks. And all of a sudden, he started driving in the wrong lane. There's only two lanes, coming and going. He started going in the other lane. And I thought, what is he doing? And I said, if anybody's coming the other way, it would be a head-on collision. And I looked over him. I said, what are you doing? And his eyes were shut. And I thought to myself, what have I got myself into here? Someone driving with his eyes shut? So I took the wheel and I pulled it over to the lane we were supposed to be in. And then he still had his eyes shut. So I said, I'm getting off the road. So I kept turning the wheel. I didn't even know how to drive. I turned the wheel until we got off the road. And it was bumpy because we were in the dirt and all that. And I was going to put my foot on the brake because I didn't, you know. And all of a sudden he woke up and he put his foot on the brake. He looked at me and I looked at him and I said, what's going on? I said, you almost got us killed. If there was a car coming the other way, I said, what's going on? He said, I don't know. So I said, well, you don't know? I said, maybe you should find out, you know, what's going on. So he said, I don't know what happened. So I said, okay. So we got back on the road. And we drove another half block, and all of a sudden, a train went flying by, and there was no warning. The light was out. There was no gate. And in those days, it was a big X. It was just on, you know, it wasn't working. So I think then, as you say, you could have been if he hadn't have shut his eyes and blanked out, and me pulling us off the road, we would have been right in the way. We would have been on the tracks. I know it, because when the train went by, I thought to myself, right then it came to my brain, we would have been here if that hadn't happened, because it only took 20 seconds of near miss, you know, and I thought to myself, oh, my gosh. And that was way before I even got initiated, so I know he saved us.
So the Webbs, who have rooms 301 and 302 on this end of the building, discovered you can go out this door, and if you put a rock to prop the door open, you can come down the fire escape and be here very quickly. And so I came down the other day, and the rock was gone, and there was a woman weed whacking all out here. And she saw me looking at that, and she said, oh, I had to move the rock because I didn't want grass going into the stairs. And so I just walked around, and that was it. And then here's web number two.
So I'm walking, coming in to meditate, coming down the aisle there, and this woman runs up behind me with the bouquet and says, are you the head here of this meeting thing? And I says, no, I'm just the jiva. I'm just coming in. And she says, I feel so bad. I was blowing and everything and making so much noise, and I had no idea that people were in there meditating. And I goes, don't worry about it. Most of the people have earplugs in anyhow. But yeah, she was she was just beside herself, feeling bad about all the noise that she had made the other day. The leaf blowing, yeah. And so she brought in the bouquet. And I just said to her, yeah, just put it on the table over there.
And I'm going to say goodnight because my Uber daughters are coming. I love everyone. Remember to meditate.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Good night.